that lives on dollar signs. I've been trying to find something to feed the hunger burning in my mind. Oh. Everybody needs a second chance to change the story. And I'll be anything you wanna ask of me. And I'll be anything you want, anything you ask of me. Just wanna live with the sunshine. Just wanna love with the sunshine. Everybody needs a second chance to change their story. And I will be everything you wanna ask of me. And I will be everything you want, everything you ask of me. If I could live with the sunshine, I just wanna live with the sunshine.
Thank you for listening. This is Sinead, and you're listening to Firestarter Radio on Renegade Broadcasting. The date today is October the 4th, 2016, and we are hunkering down here for Hurricane Matthew that apparently, as of last night, just decided to completely change its course and head directly towards us. Totally not weird at all, you know. They don't control the weather or anything. No, no way. Not at all. So, yeah, keep your fingers crossed that we keep power and we don't have a frickin' dindupocalypse and all that good stuff. But tonight, I'm going to be flying solo. As I said, I'm probably going to be doing some solo shows for a while. I am going to try and track Nick down so we can do that show on the Baha'i Faith, because I know he's a great researcher and I'm sure he has a ton of stuff to bring to the table. So we'll try and coordinate that in the next couple weeks. I still want to interview Ken Reed from White Lives Matter. I believe they've had their protest at the ADL. I've seen pictures, but again, I'm just so busy. It's so hard to keep up with everything that's going on. So hopefully you'll hear from him soon. And tonight for the show, I'm going to kind of piggyback off of the last two shows. On Sunday night, Urban Jungle Girl and Kyle did a really awesome show together. Very heavy material, but necessary nonetheless, and eye-opening. And it got me thinking about some other things. So I'm going to start off this show talking about circumcision and the correlation between circumcision and rape and also serial killers. Very interesting. It's just insane that this practice is going on every single day. It's complete torture. And then we wonder why people are so messed up. Really, I wonder why. Okay. Then after that, I'm going to get into this was sparked from Chris's show last night and all of his great callers and Amanda. She was wonderful. You know, they were talking about chemtrails and how, yes, it is weather modification, but it goes a step further, and they're absolutely right. It does. I've been looking into nanotechnology, Morgellons syndrome, and other related issues. And then that leads me into talking about transhumanism and the Jewish connection between transhumanism and, well, and the connection between Jews and transhumanism. Also the connection with Morgellons and transhumanism, nanotechnology. And then we get into a little bit of Israel and IVF, in vitro fertilization, which they are big proponents of there. They give their people, their population, unlimited tries, and it's free, and oh, it's so wonderful. And then after that, we're going to talk about some other revelations I've been having and just things that I've been thinking about in relation to the idea that this may be a giant quarry that we're living in. And our world may be even more not what we thought it was, if that makes sense. So I hope I make it to 2 hours. It was kind of a last-minute show because I was really, really busy this week. And I hope you guys enjoy it. I'll be back next week. And the true story of whites in South Africa is so close to being done. My graphics guy has not gotten back to me. I hope he's okay. That's really all that I'm waiting for this time. I might do a few other voiceovers because sometimes it's a bit jarring between different takes because my voice sounds different and whatnot. But really, it just needs a few little touches here and there, and I need my graphics, and then it's ready to go. So I'm hoping as soon as I get those graphics and get everything tightened up, I want to release it before the 11/11. But maybe I should wait. I don't know. So yeah, stay tuned for that. Kyle made a really awesome website. It's called whitesouthafrica.com. Go ahead and check it out. You can sign up for updates on the film. You could just spread the word. Eventually, we will host the film there. And that, I believe that is it. So hopefully we will have power and we can continue to, I don't know if we stream things out of our, I don't even know how it works. I don't know if we stream stuff or it other people stream it. I don't know, but hopefully we'll have power and we'll be able to contact you guys and keep the Tribune updated and all that good stuff. But in the case that we don't, hopefully people will pick up the slack and, post stuff on the Tribune for us or whatever. So have a good week, everybody, and I'll talk to you soon.
Oh my God, you guys, this is going to be a real short nigga report, okay? So I'm driving down my street right now. I'm headed out to work. And I see this thing that looks like a dead squirrel or some kind of roadkill. And I just, I take a look because I'm usually driving by, oh, that's sad. Or just trying to figure out, what was that? What kind of animal was that? It was a freaking weave. It was like a full-on ponytail extension in front of the black people's house that live on our street. I mean, you just can't make this stuff up, you guys. I'll snap a picture of it. I don't know. It's going to be dark when I get back. I'm already running late, but I'm sure no one's going to pick it up. So I'll take a picture of that tomorrow and I'll tweet it out and let you guys see the diversity that I get to live around. A freaking weave on the ground. Girl, somebody's missing their ponytail, okay? I don't know, but When you get to work and you realize you bald, shit, girl, you want to be real uncomfortable. That's going to be real awkward. Oh, my God. Oh, Jesus. Jesus, save me. Jesus, take the wheel. Okay, I keep forgetting to ask Kyle about this. So, Kyle, if you're listening, answer me sometime soon, and other people too. Okay, do you guys remember when Kyle, it was pretty much Kyle's idea, and I were trying to get others to do this silent demonstration where we would hold up signs that saying, you know, we are the silent majority, and, you know, we're censored, we're white, we can't, you know, tell the truth, and blah, blah, blah. Well, the whole theme of that was the silent majority. Now I'm seeing these Trump signs in people's lawns that say, Trump stands with the silent majority. And I just think that's really funny. They freaking stole it from us. They stole it. I don't know. Maybe that's been the slogan from the start. But yeah, that's funny. And I thought it was interesting too how I believe it was Hillary Clinton used the phrase dog whistling, you know, because that's pretty much what we here at Renegade have been calling the whole Trump campaign is dog whistling to all the little bitches. Oh, I love Trump. He's an alpha male. Testosterone. She's so great. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. Think about it, guys. Think about it. They're listening. They steal our good ideas. Then they freaking use them. And everyone's like, oh, yay. A piece of shit told me this. Not Sinead and Kyle and all the guys at Renegade. No, 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 no. I'll believe the piece of shit. Not those renitards. Yeah. Okay. I cannot go out in public for extended periods of time without feeling like I'm going to have a full-on heart attack, triggeritis, meltdown, because nothing makes any damn sense at all anymore. For example, okay, was out this past Saturday doing, you know, what normal people do because I was with clients. Otherwise, I would not be, like, in a mall and doing all this stuff. Okay, I don't even understand what's going on. First of all, I see two Asian parents. They looked like parents. She had a stroller and he was standing in line with this little blonde girl as if that was their child. Two Asian people with a little blonde girl. Okay, so that was weird. I'm thinking, okay, maybe they're at a birthday party and maybe, because it was a kid's place that we were in. Maybe they're, I don't know, watching someone's kid. Okay, so that was weird. Then I see, okay, well, then there was all the little kids dressed in Hoochie Mama outfits. They're probably 5 years old and they have booty shorts on and tank tops. So there's that. And then also I saw two little black kids, a black man that I think that was the father of the two black kids, and a white woman. I guess that's his girlfriend and now she's like the part of the fam. Okay, it was really disturbing. I've seen this twice actually in the past week. A white guy with a black girl. That's something I've never really seen that much before, but I'm seeing it more and more and more. And that, I mean, that's how you know this has just reached rock bottom. Because I mean, yeah, I don't know. It's just really disturbing. I also witnessed a little gang of faggots in the mall. This guy had pink hair and his shirt was rainbow colors and it said straight out of the closet. Instead of straight out of Compton. I thought that was so clever and funny. Wow, you're so original. Straight out of the closet because being gay is so edgy. Like, nobody's gay these days. You're cool. You're different. Oh my God. And, oh, okay, MAC makeup. I don't know if any of you guys, I'm sure some of the ladies listening know about MAC makeup. Okay, I used to think it was so cool, and I dropped so much money on fucking stupid clown paint for my face that I hardly ever even used. I would use it for, like, special occasions, and then I would try and do my makeup, and I'll fuck it up. Okay, so MAC makeup. They market to children. They had a freaking theme going on that was cartoons. Cartoon characters. Really? Are grown women watching cartoons? Well, probably these days, yes. But, wow. It was really creepy. And if you just look at all the people that are working in these makeup stores doing people's clown makeup, they're hideous. They're hideous even with all of the clown makeup on. And they're like fat, they're usually gay or lesbians or just super weird looking. And everyone's going in, "Ooh, I want to get my face painted. I want to look like a drag queen too. 'Cause MAC makeup's cool." Yeah, the mall is really disturbing. I saw so many mixed couples. My head was spinning. I'm like, what the hell's going on? Asians with blacks, whites with Asians and blacks, and Mexicans and Indians with whites, and what the hell? It was just really out of control. And yeah, it just continues to get worse every time I go out in public. It's pretty bad. So I think that's pretty much all that I have to report back on from my lovely enriching experience. That is like an experiment. Maybe I meant to say that. We are living in a freaking petri dish where we're being poisoned and made to be anything but human, and only some of us seem to actually see what's going on. The rest are just kind of in the middle of it, just doing what they do. It's a weird place to be, kind of on the outside looking in, but you're still in it. We're still trapped in this fucking mess. We can't get out yet. I'm working on it.
Okay, I've had a really, really, really busy week. I have not really had too much time to do any recordings, and when I've had time in the car, I just needed silence. my show's probably going to be all over the place. I don't even know if it'll make it to 2 hours, or if I'll end up posting this. I don't know. We'll see. Okay, so I wanted to read from an article that I just found that I found interesting, and it was brought up, the topic was brought up on the show with I was looking at the word circumcision and it turned into Circus Maximus in my head, but it wasn't Circus Maximus's show, it was Kyle's show with Urban Jungle Girl last night, and they were talking about just, all the things that we are bombarded with as people being born in this disgusting world right now. I mean, from preconception to even the idea of pregnancy and it's so deep, and we're assaulted on so many different levels. And they were talking about circumcision, and I found an interesting article here. They briefly touched on, you know, the connection between rape and circumcision, and you know, they're directly correlated. You know, usually when you see a population that is being circumcised routinely, you're going to see the rape, you know, the amount of rapes taking place increase. Duh, right? I mean, this is the thing. Their first lesson in life is sexual trauma, sexual torture. So they just are acting out. And I'm not saying that people that have been circumcised are like sadistic psychopaths that are like sexual deviants. I'm not saying that, but just looking at on a macro level, you know, it's teaching sexual trauma, mutilation, torture, and it's associating, you know, how do I explain it? It's imprinting sex as pain, sex as torture and humiliation and all this kind of stuff. So of course, you know, a lot of these victims are going to act that out again. Okay. So here is something from a blog. "My husband, who rarely vocalizes outrage at world politics, was visibly upset when he learned that African men were being told they had to become circumcised in order to avoid spreading AIDS. A well-read and uncircumcised man, my husband knew that he had dodged a bullet when he had been born in Africa while his father was stationed at a naval base there. The hospital had refused to circumcise him, and his parents never forced him to face the possibilities of the operation again." Okay, this is me now. Doesn't that just really put things into perspective for you guys, that it's safer to be born in frickin' Africa? In a frickin' third world country? I mean,
Some third world countries have lower infant mortality rates than we do here in the United States of America and in most first world Western nations. There's something seriously wrong. We might have really, really good acute emergency care. I'm not knocking that. I think we have great advancements in emergencies and how we handle acute situations. But yeah, no, we're completely torturing mothers and fathers and babies. It's so fucked up. Okay. Unfortunately, few parents are as well-read as he is, and most Americans continue to have their baby boys tortured needlessly, all for the sake of an ancient cultural tradition, circumcision, the removal of the foreskin over the penile glands, usually performed without anesthesia, I'd say all the time. I mean, when do they ever use anesthesia? Oh, we gave him a sugar cube. We put some stuff in his mouth so it muffles the screaming. Yeah, okay. And often within hours of the trauma of birth, psychologists continue to argue about whether or not the extreme pain and torture of circumcision leaves a lasting impression on the infants, with some arguing that the baby boys do remember, at least subconsciously, and warn that violence on them establishes a pattern that can set the course for more violence, especially violence in relation to sex in some men's lives. Duh, right? I mean... Usually abuse is like a cycle, not all the time, but, you know, you teach them what this is, they're sponges, that's what they do, they absorb it, and they just recreate it. Dr. William Keith C. Morgan, in his Rape of the Phallus, concurs with many of his peers, the removal of the prepuce exposes the glands to foreign stimuli, which dull the special pleasurable sensation receptors. Journal of the American Medical Association. Dr. Morgan likens the different sensations during penetration between circumcised and uncircumcised penises to pulling on a sock. Circumcised men experience penetration, something like thrusting the foot into a sock held open at the top, with every little bump being felt like a painful snag on a toenail. Ugh! Whereas the intact counterpart is like slipping the foot into a sock that has been previously rolled up, smooth and easy, because circumcised men have the sensual receptors around the heads of their penises dulled by constant contact with the outer world. Many circumcised men seek greater and perhaps more painful sensations to get greater satisfaction out of sexual intercourse. Okay, so I think that's why we see so much, you know, like violent porn and stuff like this, because their senses are so dulled that they have to be so hard and go so crazy to be able to feel anything. That's so sad. Okay. The fact that circumcision dulls these receptors has been known for centuries. Dr. Robert Darby, in his History of Circumcision, reports that laws were passed in the late 1800s requiring African-American men to be circumcised because it was thought they were too ignorant to maintain proper hygiene and were so promiscuous that they were the ones primarily responsible for the spread of syphilis. Arguments that sound suspiciously familiar to that used in the African continent today regarding AIDS. Okay, and then it's just a bunch of, oh, poor Africans, okay. Significantly, the national and worldwide statistics for the number of men arrested for rape and other violent crimes, including spousal abuse, who are circumcised, far outnumber those arrested who are uncircumcised, leading some experts to consider that circumcision could have a direct link not only to rape, but to incidents of incest, and practices of sadomasochism, often called rough sex. Sadly, very little direct research has been conducted to verify the link between violent sexual behavior and male circumcision. I don't even know how, I guess you would just do surveys to to research on that. While some researchers feebly argue that mothers allow this violent act on their infant sons as some sort of retribution for being second-class citizens in a male-dominated world, increasing number of parents are choosing not to circumcise their sons. Is that seriously an excuse that I'm sure some like psycho women are seriously saying that? Well, I've even heard mothers joke around and be, you know, saying, "Well, you put me through so much giving birth to you, so..." I mean, what? That's so fucked up. No one asked you to have the frickin' baby, you idiot. Okay. By raising peaceful sons, mothers could stop the destruction of our earth. If mothers protected their boys from the unconscious initiation into the military cult, we would create a sustainable future. Amen. That is very well said.
Okay, now we're going to read from an article that's called Circumcision Leads to Serial Killing and Criminal Behavior. Can there really be any doubt that when you strap a newborn infant down to a board so that his arms and legs cannot move and they shove something into his mouth so that his screams cannot be heard, and you will systematically crush, tear, and slice off the most sensitive part of his penis without anesthesia, that this is ritual sexual torture and genital mutilation, and will have long-term psychological, emotional, physical, and spiritual consequences for the boy and for those that try to get close to him? Let's call a spade, people. This is satanic. Oh, gosh. Sorry. This must be Janice. She does good work, but I hate the satanic shit. This is, I'm going to just replace it with Jewish. This is Jewish-based torture and trauma-based mind control. It is evil. It absolutely is. Okay. Now this is to the actual article. That was just a little intro. Okay, in Norway, the only country that records the circumcision status of rapists, 2% of the population are circumcised and commit more than 80% of their rapes. And since 1991, almost all wars involved one circumcised country, with some conflicts between both factions being circumcised. Wow. This includes all USA conflicts since Vietnam. No other statistical records are kept regarding the individual and social percentile circumcision status of serial killers or rapists. Yet over 50% of rapes in Sweden are perpetrated by the minority of men who belong to circumcising cultures. Now, this is this is me. I hope they don't try and use circumcision as an excuse to keep the refugees. They're like, oh no, it's just because they're circumcised. Nope, get the fuck out. Bye. Bye. I don't care if your dick gets completely chopped off. Fuck off. Okay. Circumcision status may factor highly in the USA's highest of all countries incarceration rate to population. The first killer I studied had put bandages over the wounds of the people he stabbed once they were dead. Other killers have done the same thing. Weird. Okay, clockwise. Wow, there's just showing some pictures. Okay, circumcision is a mock death ritual, a game of play killing in a sacrificing ritual. Once the tissue is taken, the concept of death is finalized and the bandage is placed. Criminally, the medically circumcision's ritual is a genital dismemberment. As early as 1945, the connection of circumcision-induced homicidal and suicidal rages was established in a child as young as 6 years old. This article also connects PTSD, then called combat neurosis, to such early surgeries and may be a reason the USA and the US military personnel are highly susceptible. Yeah, that and they're just guinea pigs. Like, they just test stuff on these people all the time, which I'm going to get into later in the show when we're going to talk about more Gellens, nanotechnology, and transhumanism. I've been going on a weird trail of research this week. I don't know. It's getting really freaking creepy, and I'm really creeped out. Okay, back to this wonderful topic and this beautiful world we're living in. Genital mutilation. Okay. Degrees and intensity vary with age and higher when young. Preverbal trauma is not easily accessed by regular memory, and much resides in the unconscious. Yes, this relates to Elena, Vladimirova, Tonetti Vladimirova. I had her on the show a while back. I think she's pissed that she didn't look into our network a little bit more because she probably does not want to be associated with an evil racist like me, but too bad. I got her to come on, and because us evil racists deserve this information just as much as anybody else. So yes, she's talking about the limbic imprint, right? And this is before we form language, before we know how to express and process events through speech, or even, you know, just processing them with language in our minds. We store that in our limbic imprint. So this is the first imprint. You have this brain, this malleable brain, and you stamp it with like a big stamp that says, life fucking sucks. Welcome. We're going to chop your dick off and let it bleed everywhere. Welcome to the world. Seriously, that's it. Like, seriously. Oh my God. Okay. I can't believe this is real. Okay. Verbal conscious memory increases the awareness of betrayal. Traumatic frustration occurs and remains with both verbal and preverbal. In essence, circumcision-related violent behavior is expressed from being a sacrifice returned.
Generally focused circumcision, assault, and battery is a form of culture-bound and culture-specific syndromes in a shared psychotic disorder. Violence between individuals and societies are common to the point of pathognomic. I don't know what that means. America's circumcision is an adopted habit of socialized violence through cultural imperialism. The result is cycles of violence and betrayal. These cycles reside in a sense of betrayal resulting in a transference of aggression onto other persons in other acts of betrayal. Besides the individual, the transference of aggression is expressed socially between one group and nation against another. Transference is a deliberate choice, and the substitute object is the genitals. Okay. So now, original FBI's criminal profilers who led the behavioral science unit in Quantico, Virginia, know circumcision is a factor in some serial killings and partly responsible for America's generalized asocial violence. It has been inferred, Robert Ressler, in an off-the-record comment when interviewed by Mothering Magazine's web editor, related the fact that the FBI realizes circumcision is a factor in violence. He explained they do not mention this because they would be considered raving lunatics and lose their jobs. Robert Ressler coined the term serial killer. This attitude pervades throughout law enforcement, from the U.S. Department of Justice down to the local sheriff departments and child protective services. Many have no clue. The same as the parents who are conned into the ritual. The con is the criminal approach used to lure victims. In Norway, the only country that records the circumcision status of rapists. Okay, hold on. We already read that. Okay, Mickey Featherstone. Mickey Featherstone was born in the Irish district of New York City. He enlisted to the army at 17, making the ranks of the Green Berets. He never saw combat because he was considered to be too small, meek, mild, and non-aggressive. Okay. When passed out drunk in Vietnam, he was circumcised by two medics as a joke. What? The army considered it no big deal and nothing happened. His sister said his eyes had become scary when he returned. He drank heavily. One time, a group from outside the Irish district was escorted out of the bar he was at twice by police. He went home. When told they returned again, he got a rifle and shot one of them in the side, not killing him. Featherstone pleaded guilty and received probation. He became a gangster. In 1971, he was confronted by another gangster and shot him dead. At this trial, the psychiatrist who testified agreed he was a paranoid schizophrenic due to his Vietnam trauma and found not guilty due to insanity. He was incarcerated in Attica until 1975 for not returning from a weekend furlough from his psychiatric facility. When released, he became a mob hitman and was never convicted in any trial. He was eventually arrested for passing a counterfeit $100 bill and pleaded guilty. He received a six-year term from Judge Lawrence Pierce, who told him, "Mr. Featherstone, the war in Vietnam is over," but Featherstone was still circumcised. Eventually, Mickey Featherstone was found guilty of a murder he did not commit. Figuring he was set up by the mob he worked for, he turned informant and went into witness protection. Sounds like Mouchel. I'll get to that later. Turning traitor and grown men who harass young youth on the internet. We'll talk about that later. Okay, Featherstone's signature in some of his killings was dismemberment. He, with his partners, would cut them apart in a bathtub and dispose the remains. This was somewhat common in their gang warfare. Mickey Featherstone's legacy of crime is attributable to his circumcision as an asocial sacrifice returned. Okay, Brisbane Craigslist murderer. Philip Markov was born in 1986. His biological father is Jewish and his mother is Catholic. He was circumcised. His parents divorced and his mother remarried. She and her husband occasionally attended Catholic Mass, especially after the children grew. If Philip attended Catholic catechism classes or other forms of religious instruction, he would have learned the Christian Testament's verses regarding circumcision. If he questioned the Catholic nuns, who would more than likely not respond with simply because God was, children are not taught by the American Catholic clergy any more that circumcision is a sacrifice at birth. Instead, they only emphasize the crucifixion of Jesus. Jesus to Christians is the last sacrifice, but this is not lost to many males. Markov was a good student and a second-year sophomore in medical school. First freshman-year medical students take gross anatomy, where they dissect perverse human... I love how it's called gross anatomy. gross. It is gross. Ew, just the smell of formaldehyde from the science lab. Ugh, so disgusting. Okay, where they dissect preserved human bodies. What did he see? What did he learn? What did he discuss? What did he keep to himself? As with almost all, Markov used transference of aggression on women. He started using Craigslist to meet victims. At first, he committed a violent robbery, but the name of his second victim that he killed, Jalissa Brissman, was the stressor that drove him over the edge with loss of control. His third victim survived. Violence usually never decreases, further indicating circumcision was the stressor. Was circumcision mentioned or discussed before he killed her? I don't know. Julia Brissman. The circumcision connection was immediately made. The Jewish community was quick to respond. Their analysis was, though his father was Jewish and his mother was not Jewish, Markov was not Jewish. This is because to be Jewish, the mother must be Jewish. Thus, they felt culturally exonerated and self-glorification maintained in their Munchausen behavior, but Markov was still circumcised. Finally, after three previous attempts, Markov committed suicide in his jail cell and never went to trial. Psychologists debate why. Some say it was the ultimate expression of selfishness and narcissism and not about his ex-fiancée, whose pictures were all over the wall. In his blood, he wrote her name as well as her affectionate nickname. Not one psychologist equates this as embarrassment equivalent to why many women do not report their rape. Somewhere he came to see himself as a deformed man. He could not handle it anymore, not what his future would surely have been. Philip Markov's spree, Craigslist crimes, are attributable to his circumcision as an asocial sacrifice returned. American medicine. Circumcision is a social crime. The signature of the crime is called the ritual. Socially, the specialized agent is the person who carries out the ritual. It does matter if the ritual agent is a witch doctor, Moel or physician. Psychological conditions determine what drives their knives. The 2012 AAP, I think that's American Academy of Pediatrics, policy statement is a criminally based lie which partly resides from delusional disorder. Much involves narcissism and a malignant hero syndrome, common in pathologic healthcare providers. As with team member serial killers, some may be the dominant personalities while others are submissive personalities willing to follow to belong. This American Academy of Pediatrics circumcision policy is carefully crafted with active components of public relations, propaganda, and persuasion through the power of words with logical fallacies. The inactive component is a screaming misdirection as a contrived improper differential diagnosis through omissions of facts that would make their assumptive balderdash the opposite. American medicine has been blessed no retaliation has occurred upon them because of this cycle of abuse and betrayal. Serial killers do not usually attack the object of their resentment. The frustration of circumcision is evident. There is a website, Circumcision Karma, that may appear disturbing to some. It has short biographies of many circumcised serial killers and conjectures about other individuals. There are historic instances where circumcision is the cause of social violence. It occurs when men take over the social role of protecting its children's socialized genitals. These are short and extremely violent. It is best to cease the criminal ritual altogether because present winds are foreboding. Okay, so now to shift topics. I wanted to talk about Morgellons syndrome. And it's something I heard about a long time ago, a couple years ago, when I was first learning about chemtrails or geoengineering, whatever you want to call it. And it was obviously freaking me out back then. And I guess I just put it on the back burner because I found out all this other stuff that they were doing to kill us. And I got, you know, focused on that stuff. So Morgellons, this is really freaking weird. And it kind of ties everything together for me, at least full circle with, you know, some of the stuff I was, you know, putting forth some ideas, just kind of thinking out loud, basically about the silica-based life that might have been here before and how, you know, maybe we fell, right, to a carbon-based life. And I think they're trying to create silica-based life in an artificial form now so as to basically trap our souls here forever. And now I'm going to play you an excerpt from Sophia Smallstorm's talk she did on
nanotechnology, Morgellons. What is the actual thing called? It's called Morgellons Actually Explained. I think it's there's some other things it's labeled as on YouTube, but if you type in Sophia Smallstorm Morgellons Actually Explained, you'll get the whole talk. I'm just going to play, you know, like 15 or so minutes from it, because she explains Morgellons really well, and then I'm going to talk a little bit about what I've been looking into, and I might eventually get this woman that Sophia recently interviewed on to interview her. This woman has been dealing with Morgellons for many years, and I mean, these people just have open lesions on their bodies constantly. And you know what they're told when they go to the doctor? They're told that it's all in their heads, and that they're imagining it, and that they're just, I guess, picking their skin apart and finding fibers that are found nowhere else in the world inside of their bodies, as well as other weird objects that look like, that look machine-like. Okay, I know this sounds really freaking weird, but it's happening. So I'm going to play this snippet from the talk. If you want to hear the whole thing, go check it out. And then I'll get back into the other stuff on the other side.
The groundwater. You can't say this is in the earth itself coming from the earth. It's got to be coming from the environment. The dying of the trees. I've spoken to Charles Little. He's the author of this absolutely fantastic book, which you can buy still by going to half.com or Amazon used books. It is about the natural or biotic reasons for tree death and also the effects of industry and deforestation, which began decades ago when manufacturing exploded, acid rain, different forms of pollution started to affect trees. But what has come along since this book was written is this. Nowadays, we have an effect coming out of the environment that can't possibly be natural. Look at this corkscrew. I took this picture myself. This is the wine opener style. You have nature trying to cope with the introduction of new substances, particularly metallic oxides, which are also the metallic salts. Living things, as I said before, the metallic salts have an affinity for water, so living things take up these salts along with the water that they're seeking. The natural world, which gets its food from the ground, is sucking this stuff up. This is a scraggly pine tree outside the post office in Cardiff, California, where I go every day. And you can see how brittle it is, lots of needles lost. If you look closely at the needles when you stand under the tree, you see that they're all frosted with brown. Signs of tree death are these sagging limbs, these leafless, scraggly branches. You also see infestation by bugs, insects, mites, fungus. These are spider mites that have taken up in a tree that was right next to my house. The entire tree had to be felled because of these white webs in it that were killing off the tree. But again, I'll explain why in a minute. This isn't the primary source of the death. Here you have a phenomenon that Deborah Whitman, who's here with us today, has done a lot of research on. The white, we call it the tube sock effect on trees. You see white bark. And when we tested the bark of this tree, it showed it had these readings, aluminum 387. Now, this is milligrams per kilogram because this is a mass analysis rather than a liquid context. So you have barium at 18.4, strontium 113, and titanium 15.2. You can see again in these photos the enormous scorched look. That's a very dying, very unhealthy tree. And you see this other thing called secondary growth. The tufts on the trunk poking out, that's the tree giving itself, desperately trying to give itself a second stab at life. So when you look around you and you see these little growths, sometimes they're all the way along the trunk from the ground up. The beauty of an induced problem is that its twin is the solution. As nature begins to die, we will be told that science will have to step in to save it. So, You'll have GMO trees as the answer. The silent forest, they call it, genetically engineered trees, non-reproductive, no fruit, nuts, blossoms, no insects, animals, birds, low lignin, that's the wood fiber, which makes the tree very easy to cut and pulp. The silent forest will grow straight and tall and will be replenished by the state in what will be considered appropriate numbers and in appropriate locations. In May 2010, from this article, we learned that the USDA approved large-scale field trials of 200,000 GMO eucalyptus trees made by ArborGen, biotech company, to be planted from Florida to Texas. Now, we're told that the purpose of the trial planting is to evaluate whether such GM trees can become new sources of wood for paper and biofuels, also in the name of conservation and improvement. This is a story they give us. We're trying to conserve, we're trying to go green, we're trying to help. But then you come in up against articles like this, 2008. This was from something called the MIT Technology Review, an article announcing biochemistry's development of toxicity-resistant crops, in particular, in this article, aluminum-resistant plants. So the article tells us that aluminum in soil stunts the growth of crops. Wheat, corn, and barley don't fare well in aluminum-laden soils. But now, scientists, plant scientists, have found a way to get the plant to shut down its own cell division. To stop the plant from shutting down its own cell division. Because when a plant encounters toxins in the soil, it says to itself, I don't want to keep growing. So it shuts down the cell division. But they have figured out a way to keep prompting those plants to produce reproduction. So this is a gene mutation, a single gene mutation, that inactivates a protein so that the plant continues to grow. The quote from this article is very interesting. The plant is effectively blind to what's happening in the cell. And that's from biochemist Paul Larson. The mutant plants can maintain high levels of growth in the presence of toxic levels of aluminum, even if they sustain DNA damage. When something begins to die in nature, it attracts bugs, blight, molds, even viruses and bacteria. This is nature's way of hastening decomposition so that the dying form can become food for other living things. Today, we have an epidemic of tree decline all over the world, not just in America, but it's in Australia, it's in Europe. Thousands of square miles of die-off in the savannas and forests of many, many continents. And in cities and suburbs, trees are rotting as they stand, swooning, breaking. They are hazards to property, requiring removal. Six trees around my house have been taken out in the last 2 years. Sunlight is a natural disinfectant. As hazy skies limit the sunlight, molds and fungus grow. As plants that are taking up toxins struggle to live, molds, viruses, bacteria begin to take them over. This is all part of nature, and bioremediation will be the obvious answer. Metallic salts have made our air conductive. This means that we and everything around us can transmit and propagate energy. The air is no longer neutral. It no longer supports in a healthy way living things. The second group of materials found in these environmental samples is unidentifiable fibers. And I really want you to appreciate the meaning of unidentifiable. These fibers have been sent to sophisticated laboratories, and there is nothing, nothing in the databases that match them. So these are fibers, we could say, that do not exist in nature. People around the world are developing lesions on their skin that ooze and produce fibers. This is known as Morgellons syndrome. Tissue samples cultured from ordinary people without this ailment contain and grow the very same fibers. Here's a 5-inch lesion on a woman's body that has never healed. 5 inches. The fibers or filaments are actually tubules with hollow insides. When these fibers are cultured, they produce colonies of filaments. You can see the extension filaments. And these colonies continue to grow and reproduce, branching out into more filaments and more colonies. The filament cultures can be grown from saliva samples, tissue from the skin, mucus, urine, blood, from animals and people, regardless of the presence of the Morgellons condition. The fibers are segmented with visible structures inside them. So where do these fibers or filaments come from? Airborne environmental samples that were collected by Clifford Carnicom, he is a researcher in this subject, in 2000, the year 2000, gathered at high altitude on a mountain in New Mexico, showed the presence of those fibers whose structure matches exactly the tubular filaments. When I say fibers and filaments, basically interchangeable, showing up in our blood, tissues, and skin. Additionally, the samples collected by Mr. Carnicom showed what he calls, and was called in biology, desiccated erythrocytes. This is a multisyllabic term, but it means dried red blood cells. So, why these were in the air? Why are dried red blood cells in the air? Very puzzling. A medical microscopist, a biologist specializing in microscopy, confirmed to him that they were human red blood cells, but that they had been engineered in some way so as to be preserved. So again, you have to ask yourself, if I were 5 years old, I would say, Mommy, what are red blood cells doing falling out of the sky? Biology divides life into three kingdoms: bacteria, archaea, and eukarya. Bacteria and archaea are simple organisms with no subcellular compartments. Eukarya are complex with defined cell compartments and internal organelles, mini organs like mitochondria that make DNA and energy for the cell. Plants, animals, and humans are eukaryotic, as are fungi and slime molds. The archaea are the hardiest of the life forms. They're able to withstand grinding pressure, heat, acidity, and alkalinity. They can live in volcanoes, geysers, and the ice shelf. Bacteria, on the other hand, will die in extreme heat and cold, which is why we cook and freeze our food. Now, the materials appearing within these filaments are as tough as archaea. They look like bacteria, and they self-replicate. One looks like something called mycoplasma, but is not. One looks like chlamydia, but is not. And natural fibers or filaments would be classified as fungal in the domain of eukaryotes. But these fibers contain forms from the other two groups inside them. You're looking at a tubular fiber with self-replicating internal elements resembling bacteria and behaving like archaea. That does not happen in the natural world. So what are they? What's going on? It appears that within our bodies we now have all three life kingdoms replicating themselves. What does that make us? Are we still eukaryotes, or are we becoming something else? You could call this transbiology, a crossing of biology, the creation of hybrid forms. Materials are forming in our bodies that are not native to us, not natural, and entirely new. You can see in these pictures the tubular filaments with the branches. They're branching off. That's their self-replication. They're creating new colonies. And you can also see in the bottom picture a little bud. That's the beginning of a new fiber. The territory of things on the scale of atoms and molecules is the nano world. Science has opened up the nano universe, where incredible new creations are possible. Nanotechnology explores materials that are less than a micron in size, or from 1 to 100 nanometers, and a nanometer is a billionth, 1 billionth of a meter. Nature and biology continually work on the nanoscale, assembling proteins and building with crystals to conduct the business of life. Spider webs are an example of that. Very fine filaments with enormous strength and flexibility because they contain nanoscale crystals. So let's go back to the filaments and the structures they contain, these ones that Clifford Carnicom has found. In those unidentifiable filaments, he has observed the formation of red blood cells and submicron-sized structures. So now you've got a filament making its own red blood cells. The engineered cells, the red blood, very, very tough, withstanding excesses of heat and chemicals, indicating that they are designed to endure almost anything. He has put them in a Bunsen flame, he has poured bleach on them, acid, and they still endure. In addition, they are able to replicate, growing outside of the body in a petri dish. This is highly sophisticated technology going on by itself, not in a laboratory. So we are witnessing red blood growing outside, having nothing to do with the bone marrow, in a petri dish, in somebody's low-level lab. Could it be that artificial materials are being introduced into living things? Here you have, this comes from the nanotech industry. It's what I call the nanotech pyramid. You start with materials, you go up to structures, processes, and devices. Could it be that artificial materials are being introduced into us to create new processes from the ground up, which processes will override our own natural biology, our own internal systems? People with advanced Morgellons syndrome started with fibers coming out of their skin, and they're now observing very strange crystalline forms and metallic devices. The fibers became multicolored, and now they were accompanied by plaques, strange, hard little, almost like shards. People say they're like glass, and they're colored. The lesions keep emitting these things. They don't heal over or close, sometimes for years. Here are more plaque structures, even grooved metallic devices. On the right, you'll see one device, the front and the back. These images are supplied by Jan Smith of MorgellonsExposed.com, who has done extensive research on biotech websites, looking for things that match what comes out of her body, and she's finding them. The fibers from her skin were from high-density polyethylene. And I'm going to read what she's written on her website. The bizarre nature of my findings suggests a man-made source. It occurred to me that if these pathogens were being bioengineered in a lab, they were made of multiple components. The mutated material might reproduce and intermittently send out a batch of identifiable debris, much like the original genetics. I call this type of debris throwbacks. It's her theory that when new life forms are made through this gene splicing and mutation, bioengineering and nanotechnology, they will self-replicate in all kinds of ways, creating different mutations in each generation. Morgellon specimens can sometimes be identified with the original spores before those mutations occurred. Jan found three varieties of something called Oomycota fungus in her specimens, as well as something else called Dictyostelium discoideum, which is a slime mold that is a major player in biomedical research today. The material coming from her body was ribbony and motile. It was grooved and oval, very much like the Oomycota spore you see here. At the bottom, where the purple arrow from the bottom is it's a diagram of Oomycota. And on the upper right, you see something that came out of Jan's body that looks exactly like Oomycota. The fiber strands that you see here were made of cellulose and GNA. GNA is glucose polysaccharide sugars, and this was confirmed by microscopy. GNA is a synthetic cousin of DNA. It has a 3-carbon glycerol sugar in it instead of the 5-carbon that you find in DNA. Here's a news report from April 2008 in which we are told, big headlines, GNA is DNA's chemical cousin. It's a nanotechnology building block. The Biodesign Institute at Arizona State develops the first self-assembled nanostructures composed entirely of GNA, synthetic analog of DNA. The nanostructures contain additional properties not found in DNA, including the ability to form mirror image structures. An NIH article from Japan, on research from Japan, also tells us that various conductive polymers and gold nanoparticles are entrapped within the helical superstructure of this GNA. Now, the particular sugar found in this GNA is called beta-1,3-glucans. And here you see it under what's called a Raman spectroscope, very sophisticated equipment. It looks, the microscopist who looked at this called it a sugar snake. So this is the GNA that you're looking at. When Jan's fibers were put to a high heat flame, they released what she calls a gold payload. So they dropped out this tiny little bead of gold. And here's more. The fibers that contain a head, she calls it a golden head, orbs, and they all have this payload in them. Here you have a nano array that she found, a couple of them in her body. Nano array is a tiny device used in biotech for DNA hybridization. And on the left, you see a diagram from an industry website of a nano array. And on the slide, you can see actually two of them. She's marked them with red X's that came out of her body, looking exactly like this. And again, I'll say it again, the nano arrays are these tiny devices that are used for DNA hybridization. So I'm going to repeat my nanotech pyramid. We begin with the emergence of basic filaments, followed by more complex structures. So what processes are going on here? Are these materials combining to form devices that are working together inside us? What is happening to our biology? And remember that tissue samples obtained from ordinary people who have no Morgellon symptoms, no lesions, can be cultured to produce the very same filaments found in people with Morgellons. So we would have to conclude that Morgellons is like the canary in the coal mine, and that only some people are exuding the materials. And could that be because their bodies are rejecting it, while our bodies are integrating it? Jan's body has been sending out these plaques, colored plaques, which are hard pieces of silica. Some of them have these dots on them. They're very small. They require handling with a needle as she places them under a microscope. The plaques are fragile. They can shatter. Quantum dots, which are the colors you see, are nanocrystal semiconductors made of heavy metals surrounded by an organic shell. Now, I want you to remember some of these terms. Heavy metals, okay? Heavy metals, aluminum, and so forth. So these are nanocrystal semiconductors surrounded by an organic shell, but they are made of heavy metals. And Morgellon subjects are also finding this stuff. Jewel-like hexagons, faceted pyramids, crystals. Hexagons have shown up environmentally, not only in tissues, but they are in environmental fallout. This specimen is provided by Morgellon's research group, and we have a table here this weekend, Mike and Jennifer from Morgellon's research group. Here is a pink, ruby-colored pink layered crystal. The little inset image, you can see actually the layers in it. This was an environmental crystal found. Here is something that was not visible to the naked eye, but the woman who told me about it and sent me the photo was looking at hay. She lives in Oregon, and she was looking at a piece of hay under her microscope, and she found this bright pink, teeny tiny little crystal. You get crystals with embedded hexagons, strands that glitter. The one on the right, that's a glittering strand that came out of somebody's body. Here's a picture of tissue from a lesion with several crystals. You can see the arrows attached to it. You can see the fiber coming out from the bottom. You have combinations of wires and those quantum dots. Now here are the nanotechnology dyes. And there you see the colored plaques that have been coming out of people's bodies. One on the below has fibers attached to it. The industry tells us that quantum dots are tiny nanocrystals whose small size gives them unprecedented tunability. Okay? Tunability. The piezoelectric effect is the internal generation of a voltage when an outside pressure is applied, and vice versa. You can Google the piezo effect. The piezo effect occurs in crystals, ceramics, DNA, and certain proteins. So an example is, when you put a frequency to a crystal, it generates a voltage. And when you put a voltage to a crystal, it responds with a frequency. We call this piezoelectricity, electricity resulting from applied compression or frequency. Recent work by Clifford Carnicom reveals that a filament culture subjected to a blue light frequency, that's 375 nanometers, resulted in explosive growth of the culture within 24 hours after the initial incubation. So he put the blue light on, incubated it for 5 to 7 days, and then it exploded into all those little fibers that you see. We now live in a frequency-filled world. I don't have time to address HARP, artificial weather, and the enormous spread of unnatural frequencies that are affecting the Earth today, but I will say this. I came across a very well-known paper on electromagnetic fields and neurology, neurological function, written by Professor Ross Ady, Loma Linda School of Medicine, with the subtitle, A Possible Paradigm Shift in Biology. We learn that the Earth's own natural magnetic field peaks, that means peaks, top, at 32 hertz. And that only happens in certain equatorial thunderstorms. The electronics we use today generate electromagnetic fields that are tremendous in the megahertz and gigahertz, million hertz and billion hertz range. So here you can see Earth and nature up at the top, 3 to 30 hertz. You can see HARP has a low range. Then you see the Gwen Towers, that's Ground Wave Emergency Network, the blue. HARP again has another range right after that. Gwen has another range after that. And look at the phones and internet. We're talking about million hertz and billion hertz. Professor Ady reminds us that chemical bonds are magnetic bonds formed between atoms by paired electrons with opposite spins that are attracted magnetically. So if nature itself moves in the 3 to 30 hertz range, what is happening to us on the biochemical level with all the different frequencies our bodies are experiencing? What is being done to our biology? Again, I'll repeat Ross Ady's little tenet here. Chemical bonds are magnetic bonds. Electromagnetism is capable of changing what is happening in our bodies. Frequencies are capable of supplying to the synthetic materials in our bodies the force or power that activates them, gets them working, makes them come alive. Nothing about us today is normal. We have hair that glows and skin that shimmers. This is from a healthy woman in Oregon who's been doing microscopy. And if you go to Mike and Jennifer's table, they can demonstrate some of this iridescent effect for you. Here is a glowing little arrow-shaped thing found in rainwater when the same woman who supplied the former previous images, was scanning water from a puddle under her microscope, and she saw this arrow-shaped thing that glowed. And here's a hexagon that grew a fiber in 20 seconds as it was being observed under the microscope. The field of synthetic biology is a new frontier of science. It draws from biochemistry and biomedicine, genetics, robotics, radiation biology, and information technologies. Using nanotechnology, its goals are to improve and transcend the limits of nature. On February 21st of this year, Time magazine had a feature story on the singularity, the term signifying the merging of man with machine. The story was released on Valentine's Day, February 14th, to underscore a love affair, the marriage of humanity and technology. The article tells us that a transformation is coming, and our species, Homo sapien, will no longer be recognizable as itself. We will be something new, something better. The time predicted for this transformation is 2045. The man who is making this prediction is Ray Kurzweil, a futurist known for his uncanny accuracy in just this area, the pace at which technology grows and improves, such that it will one day be smarter and better than us. That's the singularity. There's a Singularity University hosted by NASA, sponsored by Google, to teach people about the intelligence explosion.
Okay, so now we're going to read from this article entitled Morgellons is Silicon Nanotechnology. It is not a parasite. Okay, we are all getting infected because it is being sprayed on us in chemtrails, or, you know, it's in quotations because I don't know what you really want to call them. Metal trails, it's usually metals, to my knowledge, that they're... We'll call them nanotrails. It sounds so cool. It's awesome. I love this technological world. Okay, the silicone nanotechnology is being sprayed on deli meats with viruses. In addition, it has been found in a very popular bubble bath. Also, nanotechnology is being found in sodas. We are being subjected to this poison from all forms, air, water, food, and household products. Who is doing this and why? They talk about the Illuminati. Okay, so to prove that this is silicone nanotechnology, do the following. Get Pedifix tea tree oil soap and rub it into the lesion for 15 seconds. Get Endure 300 ethyl alcohol gel and rub this on top of the tea tree oil in the lesion. Watch the silicone ooze out of your skin. Works best if your pores are open from taking a bath. You will be shocked at how much plastic comes out of your skin. This is for people suffering from Morgellons. I don't know, maybe others without lesions. I don't know. Because they're finding these samples just in the air. And, you know, just in people that don't have Morgellons, they're finding samples, similar samples on their skin. It's really weird. Okay, now research how polymers are being used for chemtrails and cloud seeding. Now, do we connect the dots? Spraying this plastic polymer material in the sky, we breathe it in all day, and then our bodies try to push it out of our systems, and we get lesions. Now, these are not just plain plastic polymers. These are man-made biowarfare agents filled with plastic nanospheres and carbon nanotubes, self-replicating, highly electric. Could this be used for mind control or forced chipping of the population? Also, man-made viruses are also added to the mixture. Can you say biowarfare? Compliments of our government. If you don't think our government is capable of poisoning and murdering its own people, then you haven't done your research. Okay. Okay, contact the toxicologist in Los Angeles, California, who specializes in nanotechnology. She takes phone calls from long-distance patients. She can help you. Buy her far-infrared sauna and rainbow. It's the only thing that helps. You have to use oxygen therapy and far-infrared. The government has silenced her for speaking out. They tried to kill her with poisons. If she's not on the right track, then why murder her? Anyway, the people who were tested had absolutely no parasites in their samples. Okay, now from new lab findings point to silicone/silica and high-density polyethylene fibers. Are these now being sprayed on meats and vegetables? It appears new lab findings using tissue and bone specimens have solved some of the mysteries of Morgellons disease. 18 specimens taken from a 57-year-old woman reveal bone, synovium, and joint tissue having extensive degenerative fragmentation, roughening, and bony formation, and underlying extensive degeneration of the bone. Chronic inflammation with fibrosis, calcification of the bone, and surrounding soft tissue of the joint shows presence of crystalloid fragments consistent with silicone and silica. Further, a private study to determine the chemical and biological composition of fiber specimens taken from a second woman in Florida, has shown that the fiber's outer casing is made up of high-density polyethylene,
Fibers! Yay! The fiber material is used commonly in the manufacturing of fiber optics. We're becoming machines, you guys. This is awesome. Are you bot or not? Have you seen those ads? They're telling us that we're going to get to be robots, and it's really great. I'm so happy. Thank you, SOG. The following are findings presented by Dr. Hillengrade Stein, okay. You don't need all his credentials or his fax number. Okay. His findings are pending to be published in the Journal of Pathology. Morgellons, a disease which individuals have the growth of fibers from their skin that burn at 1700 degrees Fahrenheit and do not melt. A private study to determine the chemical and biological composition of these fibers has shown that the fiber's outer casing is made up of high-density polyethylene fiber. The fiber material is used commonly in the manufacture of fiber optics. There's no history of the individual in that industry or coming into contact with this material. It was further determined that this material is used throughout the nanotechnology world as a compound to encapsulate a viral protein envelope, which is composed of a viron 150 times smaller than a virus. Oh, sorry, 1/150th times smaller than a virus. With DNA, RNA, RNAi, mutated RNA, or RNASi, linear or ring plasmids for specific functions. Toxicological pathology identification of tissue biopsies from an individual diagnosed with Morgellons revealed the presence of continual silica or glass tubules with the presence of silicone. What's going on? It must be noted that the core toxicological effects of silicone alone have been demonstrated throughout the breast implant industry and litigation cases. Furthermore, silicone cannot make silica, but silica or silica bicarbonate can make silicone through natural cellular interaction in a biological system. The subject did not have breast implants or any other implant or silicone glass glue injections. So, weird, okay. Following are photographs of the patient from which HDPE fibers were extracted. They were very graphic, showing the severity of Morgellons disease. Wow, looks very painful. It's very painful. Okay, now this is what else this doctor found and that he presented at the conference. The use of the biological pesticide Bacillus thuringiensis for mosquito control in Santa Monica. Okay, I should probably try and say it. Thuringiensis, okay, for mosquito control in Santa Monica, California, has caused a surfacing of syphilis in individuals who had some infected blood generational relative in the past who had syphilis. What this means is either the mother or father had syphilis before giving birth to the individual, passing off a DNA mutation of the virus to the child, and now these people are developing syphilis after being exposed to this pesticide. What the fuck? Oh my god. I can't. 63% of the patients diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome have a hidden lung worm. No big deal, guys. Just got fucking parasites and worms and nanotechnology in our bodies. Literally, our bodies are birthing fucking fibers and nanotechnology. They're using our bodies as a petri dish. You know how they grow ears off of, like, pigs for transplants? They're growing the new world, the new technological world, their version of the silica based life. They're growing it from our bodies. Our bodies will birth forth the new life. Even these people with Morgellons report labor-like pains, where the pains come and go, kind of like contractions, and these lesions are pushing out fucking, like, parts of machines. What the fuck? I was gonna not swear as much, but oh my god, do you guys understand what the hell's happening? Our bodies are pushing out parts of machines. Oh god. Some of them even have hieroglyphs on them, you guys. You gotta look into this. These people that are pulling this shit out of their bodies, they have microscopes and they're taking pictures of these things have things engraved on them. Sometimes they're pulling out insects. Little weird alien insect-looking things. I know you guys, some of you guys probably think this is a hoax or blah, blah, blah. No, why would all of these people just be making up these massive lesions on their bodies? And they're all over the world. Yeah, okay, I don't think it's fake. Okay, the FDA approved nanoviral protein bacteria eaters that work on deli meats and other ready-to-eat foods in August 2006. Thanks, FDA! You guys are freaking great. Food manufacturers started spraying this new nanotechnology virus on meats and vegetables. It's great. Intralytics Corporation, based in Baltimore, first petitioned the FDA in 2002 to allow the viruses to be used as an additive. It has since licensed the product to a multinational company, which is marketing the virus spray worldwide. The viruses are known as bacteriophages, viruses that kill bacteria, or phages for short. Phages have been around a long time, living as parasites inside many bacteria. Intralytics uses biotechnology to grow viral phages in a culture with listeria. I know that listeria is the bacteria that's in some cheeses that they tell pregnant women to avoid. I guess it causes birth defects or something. In theory, teaching the viruses to recognize the bacteria. The FDA-approved cocktail contains 6 different viruses intended to attack 1 strain of bacteria. This mixture is then sprayed on food. If listeria is present in the food, the bacteria will ingest the virus. This results in massive viral replication inside the bacteria until such point as the bacteria simply bursts. The battle results in significant production of bacterial poisons called endotoxins as the bacteria tries to defend itself. When the bacteria burst, these endotoxins are released. These, along with the victorious live viruses, will now be in the foods that will be eaten, ingested into the human body. The stated goal of the new FDA-approved virus is to kill a rare bacterium known as Listeria monocytogenes. The bacterium is killed by cooking. However, if it poses a problem in meats that are cooked during processing and not cooked again prior to consumption, so it can readily infect foods such as deli meats. The FDA and Intralytics would like us to believe that these viruses will only attack the specified bacteria they're intended to kill and will be harmless to humans. Wrong. There is no way that they can possibly guarantee such safety. Viruses such as HIV recognize human cells such as T cells and natural killer cells. The HIV virus attacks and destroys these human cells. Therefore, this new spray-on virus can potentially recognize normal bacteria cells in the human digestive tract and may be able to adapt to infect one or more of these friendly bacteria in the human colon. The human immune system reacts directly to viral phages. Someone who eats a lot of processed deli meat is certain to invoke an immune reaction to the virus. What will this reaction be? Allergy, asthma, autoimmunity, Morgellons, cancer? How can the FDA approve a food additive that it knows can induce a variety of human immune responses? Well, because they're trying to kill us, that's why. Now you're wondering, what does this have to do with Morgellons sufferers? Well, nanotechnology is the ability to control things at an atomic and molecular scale of between 1 and 100 nanometers and has been met with enthusiasm across a variety of industries. Critics highlight the murky area of how nanoparticles affect toxicity, and they say nanoparticles should be treated as new, potentially harmful materials and tested for safety accordingly. Unlike pharmaceuticals, which must go through a series of pre-market approvals, finished dietary supplements need no pre-market approval. Under the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act, which is part of the Food and Cosmetic Act, only ingredients not marketed in the U.S. before October 94 must be approved by the FDA before use in consumer products. Thus, as it stands, pre-market regulation of nanotechnology and dietary supplements, biological pesticides, and other man-made nanotechnology does not fall under FDA, EPA, OSHA, FIFRA, and other regulatory agencies in the USA, just for the simple reason that the nanotechnology is so small that the conventional regulatory laboratory methods do not have equipment to measure at 9 decimals below the zero and are only addressing 3 and 4 decimals. So there you have it. There's that. That's great. Just looking at some of these photographs of the things people find in their bodies, it's really freaking weird. It looks like fishing wire sometimes. There's a picture here, photograph of silica crystalloid material and silicone. Wow. Really weird.
Okay, so now I wanted to read to you guys from an article entitled Beyond Otaku, Transhumanism, and Judaism. And I believe John Cale, the audio that I played for you guys last week and commented on. He was talking about how he apparently was suffering from otaku. He even says something along the lines of,
Guys, this is a real thing. Go Google otaku. It's seriously a problem.
Okay, so this kind of is hopefully tying together with the Morgellons and some of the nanotechnology and weird stuff that people are experiencing, you know, coming out of their body in some cases. And I know people probably think this, you know, is just nuts, but I don't think a lot of these people will just make this stuff up. I've seen their pictures of what's happening to their bodies, and it's really weird. Okay. So transhumanism seeks to bring about a radically transformed future, one in which every aspect of our human existence is changed for the better. Yeah, of course. The ideology, though not explicitly dependent on any one culture, is in practice tightly bound with Silicon Valley way of life, intellectual, elitist, Americentric, secular, and technophilic. Ethnic groups worldwide have developed distinctive elements such as oral traditions, literature, song, visual arts, crafts, languages, family structures, ritual, moral systems, and much more. If transhumanism completely remakes mankind in its own image, we will lose the best of thousands of world cultures. From New Guinea to Lapland, transhumanists counter that in their preferred future, people will be permitted to retain their atavisms, Amish style, or else to adopt for themselves features of any culture, just as people today can choose punk, goth, otaku, or polyamory. Great choices to choose from, huh? Okay. These alternatives leave a thin broth in place of yesterday's rich stew. Western civilization has already swapped thousands of now dead cultures, eliminating both their good and their bad aspects. Transhumanism threatens to wipe out all the rest. Many transhumanists strive to base their principles and beliefs on culture-neutral national principles, such as utilitarianism. Yet, cultural neutrality does not require neutralizing culture. Transhumanism also believes in humanity plus, in enhancing the best of what makes us human. This includes not only universal values, but also those found in the tremendous variety of cultures. There is more out there than furries and anime. I think this person might be speaking English as a second language, because some of the tenses are weird. We must open a path into the future for these myriad cultures. The path-breaking transhumanism belief system does draw on richer historical roots that are readily visible in its future-looking ideas. Though these are less important influences, they serve as a reminder that not all is nationalist, libertarian, atheist. Transhumanism has drawn on Pierre Teilhard and Desjardins' Jesuit learning, as well as the Taoist and Buddhist insights of East Asia, the Paleolithic lifestyle represented by today's hunter-gatherers, and the Russian Orthodox traditionalism of Nikolai Fedorovich Fedorov. Interesting. I mean, let's go back to, we've got these Jesuit people taking a little bit from the Taoist and Buddhist traditions of East Asia. You know, you really had that being pushed during the sexual revolution and the hippies in the 60s. And then now this whole paleo shit is really annoying, but people love it. Oh, paleo, you're a caveman. Eat paleo. And then you have the Russian Orthodox traditionalism, big in the pro-white sector. You know, I gotta wear like a freaking scarf over my head and go to church every Sunday. Okay, interesting. This essay will trace the connection to transhumanism of another source, the Jewish culture, religion, and ethnic group. Okay. The roots of apocalyptic. The singularity is a modern apocalyptic, the end of days, the looming threat of world-destroying nanobots or a super-intelligent machine as world-devouring demon god. Along with that, the singularity offers the promise of a messianic transition guide to lead us to utopia, with a singleton AI as benevolent god figure, or as Eliezer Yudovsky had put it, an entity greater than any god ever imagined. Okay, this is me now. I don't know if any of you guys have watched Zeitgeist back in your initial truther days, you know? Truther 101. Zeitgeist. But I think it was Zeitgeist where they had that guy, Jacques Fresco, who Mel V has interviewed, by the way, many times. They're very good friends.
Jock Fresco, who lives in Florida, actually, the Venus Project, right? I don't know if any of you guys have heard of this, but, you know, back when I was pretty naive, when I was first looking into all this stuff, I thought, what an amazing man, what a great idea. We just have this giant computer run everything. And, you know, we just trust that the computer is going to do what's best for us, and no one's going to, you know, hijack that technology or anything. I think he even lives in, I don't know if it's called Venus, Florida, or Jupiter, Florida, I forget. But yeah, he's in Florida. I should go take a visit, Jock Fresco. I believe he's a Jew as well. Jock Fresco. But correct me if I'm wrong. So he kind of had this idea before to just have a big giant computer run everything, and we'll live in these futuristic looking cities and pods and cool, and it's going to be great. Not that those designs can't work or anything, but I don't know, the whole idea of this big central computer running everything. Not that I'm against technology, but I don't trust that guy. Okay. So, the idea of the apocalypse, originally meaning revelation, emerged in Judaism during the late biblical period under the influence of Persian Zoroastrianism. The idea reached the form we know today around the turn of the era, emerging in both Judaism and Christianity. As Stephen Cass points out, the concept of singularity differs sharply from the religious version of the Abrahamic religions. Still, there is no doubt that the rapture of the nerds evokes many of the same feelings as the Jewish and Christian apocalypse. And of these two religious visions, the singularity more closely resembles the Jewish version, in which the Messianic era is purely earthly, a much improved political situation, with people living their lives in a material utopia, not transfigured into a spiritual existence. There is a precedent for strivings toward an early Messianic era, with overtones of transhumanism. Socialists, and particularly the idealists of the late 19th century, looked forward to the hell and heaven of a secular end of days, with science and technology as guides. Theodore Herzl likewise offered a technophilic and universalistic solution to the age-old problem of anti-Semitic persecution. God, it's terrible. Okay. Libertarians, who are disproportionately represented among transhumanists, envision a utopia brought about by the elimination of government interference in society. Yay. yeah. Technology is not bad, but we're losing our spirituality with it. Okay. Israel and the future. The Jewish people have rebuilt its national home, their national home in Israel. This state leads the world in many areas of interest to transhumanists: computer science, software and hardware development, biotech, and others. I'll refer you to an article by Hank Hyena Pellissier in an earlier issue of H Plus magazine for the details, and I'll let Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu fill in the picture. Don't you just love Bibi? He totally doesn't look like a frickin' troll, ogre, demon, vampire. No, he's a handsome guy. Okay. Here's his speech from the United Nations, September 2009. The allure of freedom, the power of technology, the reach of communications should surely win the day. Ultimately, the past cannot triumph over the future, and the future offers all nations magnificent bounties of hope. The pace of progress is growing exponentially. What seemed impossible a few years ago is already outdated, and we can scarcely fathom the changes that are yet to come. We will crack the genetic code. We will cure the incurable. Now, just remember, this is coming from a kike. So when he says we'll crack the genetic code, that means smashing our bloodlines and destroying our genetic codes. And we will cure the incurable, that means they're going to fucking kill us all. Okay. We will lengthen our lives. That means they will lengthen the lives of the Jew vampires by probably just drinking our blood, you know, with no repercussions, because they'll control everything. We will find a cheap alternative to fossil fuels and clean up this planet. I'm sure you will. That means getting rid of all of us. Okay, I am proud that my country, Israel, is at the forefront of these advances. By leading innovations in science and technology, medicine and biology, agriculture and water, energy and environment, these innovations the world over offer humanity a sunlit future of unimagined promise.
Yeah. They're so good with their little words. Okay, so Theodore Herzl rejected proposal for a Zionist flag. Stars of David for the Jewish heritage, 7 stars for the 7 hours of the working day. White background to symbolize purity. Oh, that was, sorry, I don't know if I said it right. That was Theodore Herzl's rejected proposal. He didn't reject it. Okay, moral complexity. I have traced several lines of connection between Judaism and transhumanism. The rise of apocalyptic with a focus, sorry, their language is very strange in this writing, with a focus on material rather than otherworldly utopia, the outsized contribution of Jews to transhumanism, and the role of the State of Israel in benefiting humanity through technological progress. But I have not traced a connection between transhumanism and Judaism as a religion. In transhumanism, attitudes towards religion range from evangelical atheism to a diffuse personal spirituality. Organized religion is few and far between, with Lincoln Cannon's transhumanist Mormonism and Tomer Toth Fahey's Catholicism as notable exceptions. I'm just thinking now about James O'Mara, that fag. And just deviant, all around deviant. If you're looking for a photo, I have a picture of him being tied up and spanked on my article about the alt-right. Yeah, totes normal. So his thing, it says, futuristic entheogenic or path, I don't know what it is, but I could see that being someone that would value transhumanism. Okay. There is no explicit connection between the Jewish religion and transhumanism, but Judaism, though it includes religion in the post-Enlightenment sense of personal spirituality, is more than that, as we all know. It is not simply a religion. It is an ethnic group, an ancient civilization, a state, and a system of rules for daily life, including ethical principles. There is another area where Judaism's contribution is crucial. Judaism was the origin of ethical monotheism. Other civilizations have established their own moral systems, all related through their origin in our evolutionary past. But the moral backdrop established by Judaism has spread worldwide through the civilization in which transhumanism thrives. To a large extent, though, the medium of Christianity. We define morality here not simply in the narrow sense of altruism, but in accordance with the Jewish legal system as the best way to order society and human life. Jewish religious law frames its commandments as divinely inspired imperatives, not merely as calculations of personal benefit, nor as arbitrary customs. The laws are not necessarily moral injunctions. Seen from the ethical perspective commonly adopted by transhumanists, which tries to be culturally neutral while taking its guidance from Enlightenment principles, such as individual choice, the ethical weight of the precepts vary from the immoral to the moral. Some of the Jewish religious law, like divorce regulations, are from the modern perspective immoral. We should note, however, that such biblical commandments as the extermination of enemy tribes are proto-Jewish, not Jewish. The religion has evolved radically since the writing of the Bible. But many of the religious aspects of Judaism are explicit demands for just behavior towards others, without hope of immediate reward. It is this ancient background more than any utilitarian calculations or abstract deontological universal imperatives, which has shaped our altruistic feelings into what they call morality today. Okay, so now we're going to learn about Ray Kurzweil. He is a Jewish inventor and futurist. He's described as the rightful heir to Thomas Edison by Inc. magazine and the ultimate thinking machine by Forbes. Did I mention he's a Jew? Because he's a Jew. A really ugly, ugly Jew. Okay. He is known for his prediction that humans will soon transcend biological morality and live forever. He believes that rapid growth in technology will eventually lead to a singularity, a moment when humans and machines will merge. In the meantime, though, Kurzweil takes 250 pills, 10 glasses of alkaline water, and 10 cups of green tea every day in an effort to reprogram his biochemistry. This guy sounds like totally mentally stable. Okay. But what if Kurzweil dies before the singularity? Oh, he has that covered, you guys. In the event of his sudden death, Kurzweil has paid for his body to be chemically preserved, frozen in liquid nitrogen, and stored in the hope that future medical technology will be
able to revive him. This reminds me of the Austin Powers movie where he's cryogenically frozen. Aren't some people actually frozen right now? Walt Disney and those types? Maybe that's just a rumor. Let me know in the comments, okay? Is Disney frozen in a lab? It's important that we know this. Yes, Kurzweil is a believer in transhumanism, the effort to develop technology that eliminates aging and enhances human abilities. In other words, transhumanism is basically Jews trying to fix their genetic weaknesses. They're tired of being short, fat, bald, unattractive, and having higher risks for heart disease and breast cancer. Well, then they should just stop breeding. That's one way we can solve this. They want to change the natural order of the universe. They believe God made errors and they want to fix these mistakes with science and technology. Although Jews are mostly known for exploiting economies and destroying cultures, these are only temporary projects. Their ultimate goal is transhumanism, to merge with machines and live forever. Isn't that great? That's wonderful. So this leads me to my next point, or topic, I guess, about now, since everyone is going to be infertile, you know, that's their goal, we're going to have reproductive assistance and technology. They're already doing that. A lot of women can't get pregnant, and they're having to, well, they don't have to, but they're usually conned into getting these expensive treatments that are just wrong. I don't think children should be conceived in a petri dish. I just think it's wrong. There are a lot of kids that you could adopt. You can't, you know, I know it sucks, but okay. Where families are prized, help is free. Tel Aviv, Israel. Jewish and Arab, straight and gay, secular and religious, the patients who come to Asuta Hospital in Tel Aviv every day are united by a single hope that medical science will bring them a baby. So that's great. Now all these people that shouldn't have babies get to have a baby they can abuse. It's wonderful. Thank you, Israel. Israel is the world capital of in vitro fertilization and the hospital, which performs about 7,000 of the procedures each year. That's a lot. Wow. It's one of the busiest fertilization clinics in the world. Unlike countries where couples can go broke trying to conceive with the assistance of costly medical technology, Israel provides free, unlimited IVF procedures for up to 2 take-home babies. Jeez. Until a woman is 45. The policy has made Israelis the highest per capita users of the procedure in the world. And they have a bunch of frozen embryos with, you know, Aryan genetics in there that they can just plant into Jewish women's wombs, and that's wonderful. It's amazing when you think about it, marveled Karen, 35, who asked to be identified only by her first name. She was seated in a waiting room at Asuta's in vitro fertilization clinic, a beige canister of her husband's frozen sperm at her feet. The sperm had been delivered from another hospital where she had her first IVF attempt 3 years ago, resulting in the birth of her daughter. I want at least 3 kids, and if we had to pay so much money, I'm not sure we would ever be able to do this. Although the procedures account for one of the country's largest public health expenditures, the policy has drawn little debate of criticism. One of the few issues nearly all sectors of the typically fractious Israeli society seem to agree on. It's really creepy. Also, LA, huge, huge in vitro stuff going on there because it's very Jewy. Everywhere it's Jewy. But there, they have these things called masturbatoriums. They even have machines that will, like, that will get a guy to ejaculate into a machine while they're watching pornography. And then that's, like, how your baby is born. Watching pornography. Then your sperm gets frozen. And that's so nice. Isn't that wonderful? And your mom's, like, passed out when they stick a big needle up into her vagina, like, going through all of the layers of her vagina and skin to be able to get into the uterus to implant the egg. Like, this is just so sick. A good film documentary done about this and the Jewish connection to transhumanism is called a documentary called Frozen Angels. And I believe you can get it on Netflix, the Netflix that they send to you, the DVD. It's really good. So just a random thought that I've been having that I remembered because I'm talking about Israel, and I've heard some other people mention it, but I could really see the Jews sacrificing
Israel, so it appears that they're out of power, and they can say, "Oh, it's been a Holocaust," because they have no problems really sacrificing their own useful idiots. They don't really give a shit. So I could really see them doing that. And usually, like Chris was talking about on his show last night, you know, all the anti-Israel rhetoric and movements and stuff, a lot of them are just completely controlled by Jews. They control both sides. So, yeah, I could definitely see them setting up Israel to be sacrificed very soon. And, again, we'll have to be battling all of our people, telling them, no, guys, this is a trick, smoke and mirrors. No, you guys are just tinfoil hat, negative Nancys, and blah, blah, blah. We just don't want to have any fun. We're such Debbie Downers. We're raining on the Trump train parade, and everyone just hates that. But, yeah, they've got to face the music.
So does anybody know if they spray chemtrails over Israel?
You know, I don't know. Because it seems like we would all equally be affected by all of this, wherever we are on this earth. I don't know, though. And that leads me to the other thing I've been thinking about, which is, you know, I think a lot of these beings that are doing all of this to us and have these really sadistic, sick plans for humanity, I don't think they live above ground. I think they live underground or even some, you know, in mountains. Now, you guys probably think, oh, okay, crazy conspiracy stuff. But they really, I mean, they have underground bunkers. They have underground cities. They're capable of doing this. They're even now building them for humans to live in. You know, they've been wanting to build underground in Chicago. They have the plans for it. I watched a whole series or a whole special on it and what they're planning to do, and they can harness sunlight and all this crazy stuff. So maybe that's why they're not affected by some of these things, or, you know, I don't think they're really fully human. When you look at They Live, you know, as Rodney, I can never say his name properly, that guy, Piper, as he said, you know, it's a documentary. So, yeah, what if the Jews are just kind of the, like, the slum lords of these other beings? I mean, I don't know. Or maybe the Jews are, they have some of that DNA, but they're not the end-all be-all of who's really calling the shots. I don't know. But it's just interesting to think about. So that leads me to my next thing. I've been watching this channel called New Earth. It's apparently a Russian woman, Ivanova. We did look that name up in the Jewish surname database. It is there. However, that's not conclusive proof. But I do see kind of a theme with the Russians bringing forth a lot of this information. And I wouldn't be surprised if maybe some of them were Russian Jews bringing knowledge back, being the new Aryans, you know. So she is proposing, and also a Russian, I don't know if he's a historian or scientist, Viktor Fomenko, are proposing a new chronology to our history. Basically, they're saying that, you know, the timeline we've been given is BS, and I think we all kind of know that, but it's really, really BS. So here's what I've grasped from that so far.
Okay, so I'm going to read from Fomenko's website here, the history of the new chronology, and then if you want to see kind of this in documentary form, go to the YouTube channel New Earth. The title of the documentary is Historic Timeline Based on Historic Sites and Artifacts Instead of Blind Belief in the Quack Media. Oh, sorry, Quackademia. Okay, so here we go. Let me just get this laptop off of me. I don't like having it on. The first stage, okay, so the history of the new chronology can be conveniently divided into several stages. The first stage lasted from the 16th to the 20th centuries, when different researchers here and there discovered considerable contradictions in Scaliger chronology. Okay, so I don't know if I'm actually going to be able to fit all of this, the timeline, into a recording. So I'll just leave it at that. You guys should go check out Fomenko and the New Earth, or it's just New Earth, one word, channel on YouTube. She gets into these megaliths, this advanced technology that there's no way, you know, us primitive people would have come up with that thousands of years ago. So it seems that this world was much different. I've heard theories that
Our sun was replaced with an artificial sun, and that's why we die. We used to not die. I've heard that there's more land beyond what we know, and that's where these overlords are. I don't know. I have no idea. But I know that there are people that live underground. That's just fact. Also, just real quick, how Famenko came up with this new chronology, where he got the information for this, was from basing his studies over the lunar and solar eclipses and major stars and planets, the alignment of those reported throughout history, and also comparing the names of kings, nobles, and heroes of the most ancient empires. Also, another theory that I've been seeing thrown around is that we are living basically in a giant quarry. And it really does appear to be that way. If you look, for example, at the Gulf of Mexico, the way that the Gulf is kind of formed, you know, the land underneath the water looks very similar to a quarry. And even if you look at the Grand Canyon, that those look like machine cuts. I mean, I really don't think that a river carved that out. I don't know. Call me crazy.
Okay, so to close this out, I think this should probably fill up the 2 hours after this is done. I'm going to play a little bit from a video, a YouTube channel called Vlad Hangan. That's V-L-A-D-H-A-N-G-A-N. I don't know what other videos he has on his channel, so don't get triggered if he is, like, retarded. I don't know. But we're going to listen to what he has to say here. In regards to Toltec pottery, okay, so, and new evidence that we may be living in a giant quarry, okay. Here we go, let me get the volume up.
Now, let's go back in time and visit Tula.
Just real quick, Tula, right? Kind of like Tula.
The city of Toltec Empire, one of pre-Hispanic American civilizations. One of its pyramids feature interesting 5-meter-long statues. I'm not going to link their height to the possibility that it's actually giants that are depicted here, but it well may be. These pyramids, some with huge squares in front of them, being the prominent landmarks of the ancient cities that hint that only the chosen ones were allowed on its top for the rest of the crowd to see. And it's priests and royalty that come to mind when I think about the chosen ones. Now, the top of this particular pyramid has these columns known as Atlantean figures, suggesting these were no ordinary folk. They have intricate clothing designs and large hats. But it's something else I'm inviting you to have a look at. It's what they're holding in their hands. These can hardly resemble swords or any other weaponry.
So the picture he's showing right now, it looks, what these things are holding look just like a jackhammer. It's really interesting. It's like they're holding these little jackhammer machines, the statues here. Okay. By the way, the video is called No Forests on the Flat Earth, New Evidence Toltec Pottery. Again, this has nothing to do with the Flat Earth. He just titled it that because that's what the original video was called. So don't get your knickers in a twist, okay? Okay, assholes.
Drawing depicts these men with interesting helmets that cover the whole head with a small slit for eyes. We know the natives were rather using colorful jaguar and eagle heads and feathers on their heads and stuff like that. With this looking more like a worker's protective helmet, it covers the whole head. It covers the chin and everything else, the whole head. And the color also suggests it could be made out of metal, with metal.
Now the picture here, it really does look like the helmets in the painting on the pottery are made out of metal. And it appears that they're holding kind of these, what looks like a circular saw in their hands.
Still hasn't been yet discovered. Those things on...
Brian, sorry, I don't know if you caught that because I paused it at a weird time, but metal had not yet been discovered. So, weird that they would draw something that looks just like a metal helmet and a circular saw.
The shoulders and knees could also be part of this protective suit. Interestingly, they're holding in their hands what looks like a circular saw blades, and that little comma in the middle of the disc suggests a circular movement. Okay, moving on. Potentially, these mysterious men were working in nearby quarries extracting precious resources. They used...
Yeah, I don't know if any of you guys have seen mining equipment, but it's like a giant circular saw. And it looks very similar to what they had in their hands in these, you know, drawings. Now, were they just anthropomorphizing? I think that's the correct term. Anthropomorphizing machines, you know, making machines into people in their drawings because they couldn't, I don't know. I hope I said that word right.
The giant machines such as bucket wheel excavator. And next, I'm going to show you some of the pottery made by these natives, depicting these, even by today's standards, technological monsters. But before I do that, just imagine for a second you're an Asian American native living a rustic life, and you see these mechanical beasts for the first time. What would you think of it? I bet you would think it's some kind of a huge animal. It moves, it roars. Terrifying beast. Now, for the purpose of the experiment, I'm going to ask you a question. What would be the most terrifying animal you wouldn't want to get close in a cage? A lion? A tiger, perhaps? Well, for me personally, I have a clear win in this contest. How about you? It's crocodile, guys. Well, big cats often relax lying around, with lions sleeping for days after a good meal, the crocodile is always ready. It's always ready for action. You will never see a crocodile resting on its side with all its legs stretched out nicely. Some crocodiles are reaching the length of 6 meters. The crocodile's skin is rock solid, and its sharp teeth do not distinguish between an antelope and a human. If you happen to cross its path, he's not likely to tell you, "Please move on, you're exposing my hideout." Now check this out. The following pre-Hispanic pottery is displayed in Metropolitan Museum in Costa Rica and San Francisco Arts Museum.
Okay, so he's just displaying this pottery now that has a very machine-like head to it. It looks just like one of these excavators used for mining, the circular fashion of the spiky saw-looking things and the length of what would appear to be its neck or, I don't know, part of the machine here. We see wheels that look very similar to the wheels of an excavator with, you know, the tread going around. We see a lot of circular saw-looking objects in this pottery. It's really very, very interesting when they're compared next to each other. The machines and the pottery are nearly identical. So, I don't know. You know, how did we get here? I mean, is there a way out? Were we created to be miners? And now that they have harnessed greater technologies, they want us to be gone and turned into machines? I don't know. That's what I thought at first, but that doesn't make sense because if they had the technology before to mine and to completely destroy this realm, whatever it used to be, then why didn't they do this a long time ago? I don't know. I don't know, guys. It's all very strange, but hopefully it's given you some food for thought, and hopefully you're still stuck with me for the two, I hope I made it to 2 hours. Maybe it's even more. Who knows? And I'll be back next week with more things for us to ponder and more food for thought. Okay. Good night, everybody.